It's time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's March 31st, 1975, and this is Dialogue Conspiracy number 190. I received a letter from Vancouver today when I came in the station, Vancouver Cooperative Radio, and they will be joining Dialogue Conspiracy next week on the series. We're picking up stations around the country, and now this is the first station in Canada that will be getting the program every week starting next week. Important in the news this week, the first item that I want to bring up is the new probe, the article, New Probe of CIA and JFK's Death. This is an article from Washington, from the Washington Post and the Associated Press, saying that there would be a Senate Committee on Intelligence Operations to look into the involvement of the CIA and the links, if possible, of to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. As far as I can tell, this Senate Committee on Intelligence Operations is the one of Senator Church and Senator Hart of Michigan and Mondale and Hart of Colorado and Baker, Mathias, Goldwater, Morgan, or Schweiger. You can write to these gentlemen, those people that have been listening to this show, whether it's 1 week or for 3.5 years, and suggest that Mae Brussel be allowed to speak before this committee and present evidence of the links of the Central Intelligence Agency to the assassination of John Kennedy. I'd like to bring them evidence that there was a direct link between these intelligence agencies, and you might tell them that you listen to this program and that once a week we share facts and information about the CIA with regards to political assassinations and conspiracies. But if they're going into the John Kennedy killing, this is the area where I spent 8 years cross-filing 26 volumes of Warren Commission hearings into approximately 28,000 pages, and the only area that I did cross-file extensively were the links of Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald, husband and wife, as agents of the intelligence system in the United States. There may be some hair splitting here whether the Defense Intelligence Agency is different than the CIA, but I think the intent here is to look into the involvement of the CIA, and because the acting head of the Central Intelligence Agency is over all intelligence, that would include this massive amount of work that I've done. So I hope that you'll be writing to Senator Church and the Senate Committee and asking that I be allowed to present the evidence that I am submitting in outline form to them about when they get started, but you tell them that we share this information and that I should be allowed to go back there and speak to them. The headlines in the newspaper this week out on the West Coast, also the New York Times, not headline, but this last Sunday New York Times, involved the Marin County bloodbath when Judge Haley was murdered and Jonathan Jackson was murdered in California, and the San Quentin shootout where George Jackson and two guards and three inmates were murdered. The San Francisco Examiner, Friday, March 28, 1975, had a large headline across the top, was the Marin bloodbath a setup? And the next article the following day in the San Francisco Examiner was the denial of the official lawmen, but gave extensive detail into the alleged conspiracies that took place in California in 1970-1971. And it's those conspiracies that I want to talk about today, because I've mentioned many times on Dialogue Conspiracy since 1971, the Lewis Tackwood book, The Glass House Tapes, and I wrote about it in The Realist, the article I published in 1973, of the links of the Central Intelligence Agency to the prison system in California specifically, and to the planned conspiracies that are part of the FBI, the CIA, the police department, and the Department of Corrections. I'm speaking about examples here in the state that I know particularly about that have been exposed, but you can apply these principles to other prisons and other law enforcement agencies around the country and begin to wonder about some of your prison violence and if it is a conspiracy linked to the White House or the National Security Council. as I believe it is in California. This story came out because the trial of the San Quentin Six began this last week. After a lot of pre-trial delays, and for a while the trial was put off, it started this week, and the third day of the trial, when it officially got started, the attorney for David Johnson, one of the six defendants, came out with the information of an affidavit with allegations of the CIA, the FBI, the police department, and the Department of Corrections being behind the murder of George Jackson. And I'm going to spend a great deal of time going into the news that broke in these two stories for several reasons. The first is that those of you who listen regularly, as I say, know that I have been emphasizing these allegations and accusations for a long time, but this is the first time that they've been presented into a court of law, and they're before the California Supreme Court at the present time, whether this information can be admitted at the trial of the San Quentin Six. And I have it upon good authority of somebody in the Bay Area that not only is this information explosive, which we know that is coming out now, but there's more to come. And this is what I call Watergate West. We'll talk about it. This is Watergate West, the California conspiracies that have been continuously going on under the guise of the authorities. Last week, I read on the air what was called a legal notice by Robert Hyde. He alleges that he's going to begin on April the 4th abstaining from any food. He was going to have a hunger strike. It says, please take notice that commencing April the 4th, 1975, I, Robert Hyde, director of probe, shall abstain from eating any food until such time as the secret government, the CIA, La Costa, Younger Syndicate, stops using the California prisons to manufacture all types of violence. I'm reading this again this week, and I want to read it for many weeks on the air, but these allegations that Robert Hyde he's making against the prison system and the public officials, including the Attorney General of California, was read on KLRB last week on Monday. And then Friday, the other news began to break and spread. And this is exactly what Robert Hyde was talking about, what he's willing to die for. What he claimed in his charges, or what he calls a legal notice, is that the California prisons do manufacture violence. And he gives examples of racism created inside the prisons and the gangs, terror, the creating of the Zodiac murders and zebra murders, creating Frankensteins in the factory at Vacaville Prison. And he claims that they're behind the political assassinations to these same officials, and they're creating economic chaos on the outside. And it's these links of the law enforcement people with the CIA that are mentioned in Robert Hyde's notice last week that come out in the allegations that are now with the California Supreme Court that have been put there by public defender Cox, Frank J. Cox, up in Marin County. Now, 2 weeks ago in the San Francisco Examiner Chronicle, there was a column by Dick Nolan, a writer, on the editorial page, and he commented on the CIA and the possible links to the John Kennedy assassination, and then he concluded this article that in California we have our unsolved problem, and he went into the Robert Kennedy assassination briefly. And he went on to say that a man running for governor here in California promised to open up the RFK case, and he referred to Baxter Ward, who's a member of the Board of Supervisors in Los Angeles. And this is the first time that the California establishment press has allowed a well-known writer to speak about the murder of Robert Kennedy as being part of a large California conspiracy. And Watergate West, the term that I keep referring to as Watergate West, includes, I'll give you a definition of what it means to me and how I've referred to it on the air and in my writings, and the new affidavits of the San Quentin shootout and the Marin County shootout will link in to what I've been talking about as Watergate West. Now, Watergate East was not simply the entry of seven people into the Democratic headquarters in Washington, D.C. It was a planned takeover of the United States by the Pentagon and the Justice Department and the Internal Revenue and acting members of the FBI and the CIA. And it involves a team that have been working since World War II with efficiency and are still in operation. That includes not only Mr. Helms, who was at the CIA until recently and went to Iran, but Mr. Colby from the OSS days, who's now head of our CIA. Watergate East is being folded up, the prosecutor's folding up. They never went into the examination of who killed Mary Jo Kopechne or who shot George Wallace, and they never properly examined the discrediting of Ed Muskie or Thomas Eagleton or the payoff of Hubert Humphrey. All that has been allowed to die down. But we learned that Watergate East involved the enemy list, the Tom Charles Houston plan, blackmail, bribery, forgery, murdering, kidnapping, extortion, perjury, burglarizing. These were a few of the crimes by the president, his aides, the former cabinet members, the vice president was removed. That was Watergate East. Now, Watergate West, in my mind, includes the Vista riots, the Sharon Tate-LaBianca murders, the Santa Cruz killings, where Robert Frazier, Herbert Mullen, and Edmund Kemper, I believe, were some of the zombie type that were programmed and were front patsies for a larger plan of violence. It involves the Robert Kennedy assassination and the murder of Judge Healey, Jonathan Jackson, and of George Jackson, and the other people at San Quentin that were murdered, the two guards and the three inmates, as well as George Jackson. In August 1973, I did a follow-up to my article on Watergate East, the exposure of John Mitchell and Patrick Gray and Richard Nixon and Mullen Associates involved in the Watergate. I did an article called "The Senate Committee is Part of the Cover-Up," and I wrote about how Watergate, the real meaning of Watergate, would permeate and spread and how it was being covered up by the investigating committees in Washington. And I went into the murders, some of those that I mentioned earlier, like Mary Jo Kopechne and the attempted murder of George Wallace. But there also was the murder of Dorothy Hunt and passengers on the United Airlines. And then I went into the California problem that was directly linked to Watergate East. And I believe that this is the first published account outside of Lewis Tackwood's book, The Glass House Tapes, that we've mentioned on the air many times. It was the first link of the Watergate team to the California prisons. And I think as more evidence comes in and these affidavits, if they're allowed to be exposed, we'll show you the links of the California authorities to the White House for many, many reasons. And one example was the evidence covered in the Glasshouse Tapes by Lewis Tackwood. But in the Realist article dated August 73, in conjunction with the Watergate cover-up and martial law in this country, I had a section called Political Prisoners of America. And I said the same Justice Department, the FBI, the counterintelligence agencies, working inside the White House, the condoned election sabotage and horror stories come down upon radicals inside the prison as well as on the streets. I'm reading now from the article I did in 1973, and then we'll go into the newspaper articles and the exposures that are coming out this week. I said that Mr. Raymond Pecunier, the director of the State Department of Corrections, had publicly stated, if we get a group out preaching revolution and it's dangerous, we lock them up. And I said that many U.S. prisoners are murdered and framed and confined, not for actual crimes they've committed, but for their political philosophy. If the White House defined moderates such as Hubert Humphrey and Edmund Muskie as enemies to be defeated by any means necessary, what chance did radical prisoners have for a new chance to live? The Adjustment Center maximum security is for political prisoners inside the United States. I went on to give examples of Dachau and Auschwitz and the excuse that prisoners were escaping as a chance to murder political prisoners. I said that Lewis Tackwood worked for the Los Angeles Police Department, and he revealed that the CIA and the Los Angeles Police Department and the FBI have been in collusions with a conspiracy plot that took place at San Quentin. This was the George Jackson murder and the framing of radical prisoners for other deaths that occurred that day. The White House espionage group were responsible earlier for killing 28 Black Panthers and other minority leaders. Tackwood had stated in 1971 that the LAPD, the criminal conspiracy section, which links to the CIA and FBI, had foreknowledge of the Judge Healey murder, the Marin County shootout, and the San Quentin killing of George Jackson. In line with murdering political leaders, rioters, and Black Panthers, George Jackson was marked for death several years in advance of the shootout. Many prisoners have been offered parole if they would kill him or frame him. Refusal to comply brought more charges of assault and punishment. I also mentioned that Ronald Reagan had on his desk information as early as October 23, 1971, that would have prevented the shootout at San Quentin. And I alleged in this article that Stephen Bingham was an agent provocateur of the San Quentin shootout, that he was employed and used for the murder of George Jackson and the subsequent imprisonment of the six radicals, political radicals at San Quentin, known as the San Quentin Six. Their names are Fleeta Drumgo, Willie Tate, Hugo Pinnell, Johnny Spain, Louis Talamance, and David Johnson. Now, these six, I said, will be on trial, and reiterated that an excuse for killing George Jackson would be that he escaped, that Jackson actually was shot in the head. There were discrepancies regarding the autopsy and the location of the wounds. I'm reading this article because it came out 2 years ago in The Realist, a little less than 2 years, and just now the headlines are carrying this story, and it is a very big story. I said that Bingham, according to Lewis Tackwood, was not a communist or a radical. Lewis Tackwood told me he was sent for British intelligence, that he went to San Quentin, that he provided the excuse for the George Jackson killing. Now, this is, again, when I said 2 years ago, this is in the affidavit that came out this week. He provided a gun, which was supposedly in Jackson's wig. Charges against the San Quentin Six are for the murder of two other prisoners and the guards. And I went into Robert Mardian, the Attorney General, who's now been indicted in the Watergate case, for setting up grand juries just for the purpose of committing radicals, and how the grand jury was broken up when the San Quentin Six were indicted 2 years ago. It was a stormy session. One member left forever and never came back. Two walked out of the meeting at the time and said that that grand jury is not serving justice, that it's simply vengeance. Members of the grand jury and the attorneys and outside authorities were never allowed in San Quentin to investigate the incident. There was no impartial investigation at the time after Jackson and Five were slain. The espionage cover for the murders was that throats were cut, and I challenged whether or not they actually were cut or whether the bodies of the guards should be exhumed, because the phony story at Attica was that a guard's throat was cut, and this served for the National Guard to come in and murder 43 people when it turned out later no throat was cut. And I suggest in my article that they exhume the guard's body, and I mentioned Rochelle McGee, a defendant in the Marin County courthouse case, who is in jail now serving a life sentence. He was found guilty for a lifetime on this particular charge, and that if Rochelle would use this information of the LAPD and the criminal conspiracy section of Los Angeles and Attorney General Evel Young and the Department of Corrections, that Rochelle McGee could possibly get a new chance on his case. I mentioned in this article also that immediately after the killing of George Jackson and these guards and inmates, there were 22 men in prison, and they got a letter out, and they signed the letter, and they pleaded for somebody to please solve the conspiracy that caused the bloody events. It was a very moving letter that was in the Berkeley Barb, I remember the letter, or in a Bay Area paper, pleading, won't somebody please tell us about the conspiracy that came down against us? It was signed by 22 men, including the six men that were later held responsible for the shootout. And 10 years after my research into the murder of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and the Watergate affair pouring out, I began to study very carefully the San Quentin killings. In fact, I began, it was in April of 72, prior to the Watergate, that I began to study extensively and get into what happened in the Bay Area murders and in the California prison systems and see how it related to the political assassinations. In this particular article, I said six men are anxious to prove their innocence. America must wake up and save the living as well as investigate and mourn the dead. What I meant was the men on trial deserved a fair investigation as well as investigating people like John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy's death or Martin Luther King or Malcolm X. We have to put our same investigative know-how to preserve the life of the innocent and the living as we do to find out who killed those who are now dead. I said the Watergate affair is not only about election sabotage. Watergate is about a White House president, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the CIA, intelligence agencies that conduct paramilitary operations against all citizens alike. and indifference to these conspiracy trials, which are created by the agencies for silencing minorities, will assure us that the real criminals remain in power. The team that sabotages the Constitution and the Bill of Rights has locked many innocent human beings into isolated traps inside of our prisons. 2 days before George Jackson's trial, when he was charged with killing a guard at Soledad, it was known as the Soledad Brothers trial, George Jackson was killed 2 days before his trial, and his two companions were acquitted, which means there was a good chance that Jackson would have been acquitted along with him. And knowing that he could have gotten out after writing two bestsellers, the prison system had planned in advance, because it took a lot of planning, that he would never come out alive. I also said that prison violence and imported provocateurs are escalating in San Quentin. This was written in the summer of 73, and I think in that 1 year there were at least 28 deaths and 68 stabbings in San Quentin alone. And I said the defendants live with threats of death. When the trial started this week, Hugo Pinnell was yelling that the guards are still trying to kill him and Rochelle McGee. This article concluded that California law enforcement agencies and planned conspirators should be on trial, free the San Quentin Six, and investigate Watergate West. That was written in July 73. It was published in August 73. Now, what is the new evidence that is coming out in this particular week out here in California? And it will pertain to the East. Those of you that hear this in Boston, New York, Ohio, and other cities, Watergate West will affect you like Watergate East affected us here on the West Coast. First of all, the Marin County court shootout was Jonathan Jackson, the 17-year-old brother of George Jackson, thought that he was going to help George escape. He was told that there'd be a backup truck, and he was provided with weapons, and that he would be able to free his brother to get out of prison. The shootout took place in front of the Marin County Courthouse. Jonathan Jackson was murdered, and Lewis Tackwood had claimed that members from the Los Angeles Police Department were in front of the courthouse and had, in fact, shot that day. That shootout preceded the San Quentin shootout and the two separate sets of murders. August 21st, 1971 is when George Jackson was killed, and it's this trial of six men in the prison that is taking place now where this new evidence came out. Marin Deputy Public Defender Frank Cox showed this evidence of the involvement of the Los Angeles Police Department and government agents to the murder of George Jackson, the shootout, and Judge Broderick, who's hearing the case up in the Bay Area, denied the motion for this evidence to be submitted. The judge said that what happened before wasn't pertinent to the case of the San Quentin Six. Now, that's the dialogue you get in these famous conspiracy trials. The Warren Commission said that Jack Ruby could have a trial on killing Lee Harvey Oswald if nothing was submitted that would in fact prove that Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby knew each other. This was the condition of the trial. The Sirhan case was narrowed down. District Attorney Evel Younger was there. He's now the Attorney General of the state. He narrowed down the case to who was in the Ambassador Hotel, not whether Sirhan was paid or used or hypnotized or talked into entering the Ambassador Hotel, or even if it turned out, didn't even shoot Robert Kennedy. He pulled a gun and some people were shot, but the case was limited to Sirhan being in the Ambassador and nothing that happened earlier. And these cases are narrowed down just to the moment to exclude conspiracy when a flagrant conspiracy exists. So Judge Broderick denied the motion. Then the public defender, Frank Cox, took it to a higher court, and the higher court turned it down and said this was a simple case of a shootout in the prison system, and he reminded the court that the Watergate case was simply a burglary before it was further investigated. He argued that the prosecution in Washington, D.C. claimed that Watergate was a simple burglary and what went on before didn't matter, and he compared it to that because, as we know, when James McCord started talking, Watergate was a much bigger matter and the prosecution could have found it out. I think they could have. If I figured it out here in Carmel within 2 or 3 days, I think the prosecution had time in Washington. But the judge here in California turned down this information. Now it's before the California Supreme Court, whether the evidence of the conspiracy in the shootout can be submitted at the trial. The article, I'm going to take the article section by section that was in the newspaper this last Friday, startling new charges in the shootout. The first allegation was that two Los Angeles detectives, Sergeant Mahoney, Sergeant Dan Mahoney, and Sergeant Robert Cherrett, had advanced plans for the Civic Center bloodbath and knew it was going to happen the day before it occurred. They alleged that Judge Healy was could have been saved, he could have been alive, and this is what Lewis Tackwood said. He said that Judge Healy, according to the LAPD, was too liberal. Tackwood claimed they wanted to frame Angela Davis. She later became charged with supplying the weapons in the shootout. But this murder, where a lawyer was permanently paralyzed for life, and where three people were murdered in addition to Judge Healy, could have been avoided. The allegation is that they had advanced plans and they knew it before it was going to occur. The second allegation was that George Jackson was set up for his attempted break-in on August 21, 1971. Now, all of these allegations are before the California Supreme Court now in a request to submit them into the trial for the San Quentin Six. The third allegation is that James Carr, a former friend of George Jackson's in the California prison, he was out on parole, was used by the criminal conspiracy section and the FBI. The criminal conspiracy section is from the Los Angeles Police Department and the FBI, and then was subsequently murdered at the time of the Angela Davis trial. James Carr was a friend of George Jackson, and he was threatened. He was told that he would be exposed to the Angela Davis people and the Soledad Defense Fund for the Soledad brothers, that he was taking money from them, extorting money from them, and that he would turn his friends against him as enemies if he didn't turn into a double agent. James Carr was the brother-in-law of Lewis Tackwood, the agent provocateur for the Los Angeles Police Department. And I might add, it was when James Carr was murdered and George Jackson was murdered. This was in 71. Then Lewis Tackwood came forward and had a press conference and decided to quit working for the police department and made these revelations that have been knowledgeable up and down the state of California, across the country for 2 years, but are now brought in to the court of law to defend the San Quentin Six. The allegation was that Carr was turned into a double agent and he was forced to intrigue with George Jackson, we'll go into it, and give him what amounted to a phony gun and tell him he had backup support. And then Carr, in turn, was murdered. For the police and the prison system accomplished what they wanted, but then Carr was murdered. The next allegation, the fourth, is that Melvin Cotton Smith, a police informant for the Los Angeles Police Department, infiltrated the Black Panther Party and worked with James Carr, who was a bodyguard to Huey Newton. And it was through Cotton Smith that the LAPD and the criminal conspiracy section learned of the original plan of trying to free George Jackson. And then they went along with it and had the policeman there to shoot. The backup wasn't there for Jonathan Jackson, and certainly nobody to help George Jackson escape, and both brothers were murdered. A number of persons conspired with Jimmy Carr to get arms, to provide him with weapons for the Civic Center raid, and the federal and state agencies knew about it. Now, all of this is a police department in Los Angeles worrying about what's going on up in the Bay Area and assisting in the conspiracy to murder both Jackson brothers. Dan Mahoney and Robert Cherrett from the LAPD did predict what was going to happen, and the allegation is that they were Santa Cruz the day before, and people who worked with them knew what was going to happen the next day, and furthermore, they went north to the courthouse up in Marin at the time of the shootout when Judge Healy was murdered. The federal and state investigative agencies, as I say, were alerted to this conspiracy. The persons central to the defense of the San Quentin Six were under covert surveillance and investigation before and after the events of August 21st, where they were later to be named as defendants in this bloodbath. This is the allegation of the attorney up in the Bay Area now who's presented this evidence to the judges and to the court. He said persons central to the defense of the San Quentin Six to their trial were under surveillance and investigation before and after the August 21st shootout. Another allegation is that information received from reliable sources directly supports the conclusion that the law enforcement agencies and the correctional personnel did engage in undercover and illegal acts that makes them pertinent witnesses in the trial of San Quentin Six, and furthermore should make them co-conspirators to the planning acts of violence. Attorney Cox said the police agents took part in a cover-up of such double agents and the evidence after August 21st, 1971. And again, this is like the Watergate. There were people that were in on the planning of the operations, and then the police agents that investigated it took part in the cover-up of such double agents and the evidence after August 21st, 1971. And as I said, in the realist, agents were not from the grand jury or lawyers representing these people. Later, family, nobody from the outside was allowed to get into San Quentin to investigate this matter for a long time, and only the police and the agencies involved in the conspiracy were allowed to do the investigation. A car kept a note from George Jackson about possible escape plans and ammunition that was supposed to come, but James Carr was on parole, and even though it talked about ammunition, he was never arrested. There were wiretaps on the home of James Carr and Betsy Carr, Angela Davis and her attorneys, and they were familiar about a shootout and weapons and the firing, and all of this was known to the law enforcement agencies. There's another allegation about a woman who left for Houston, Texas, who supplied a tape recorder, the tape recorder that was supposed to have been taken in by George Jackson, and the woman whose name was given, Mrs. Vanita Anderson, she was investigated for attorney John Thorne, who represented Angela Davis. Her fingerprints, I understand, do not match other evidence of visitation up at San Quentin. So whoever supplied the tape recorder and worked with Stephen Bingham is a mystery. But it's interesting that this particular party fled to Houston, Texas, because there's a bank there that supplies the black money for the CIA and the FBI. And Tackwood alleged that the link of the Los Angeles Police Department, the CIA, came directly to Houston, Texas. Therefore, a party involved was taking in the tape recorder that allegedly held the gun that was given to George Jackson. This party went directly to Houston, Texas. The gun was supposed to have been given to George Jackson while the guards looked the other way, and keep in mind that they all knew this was going to take place. As I say, Jimmy Carr was persuaded on threat of death to himself, and the criminal investigation agency, the CII in California, and the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department monitored coded message that went between James Carr and George Jackson. And these coded messages were allegedly about the escape, and they were setting up George Jackson, and they forced his friend, who was out on parole, to be a double agent, to be part of this nasty plot. One of the things that was planned was the plastic explosives that James Carr was to bring to Jackson were simply window putty. The gun that was brought to George Jackson was inoperable. It was an automatic that didn't work at all. The unworkable gun was to be given to George Jackson for one purpose. It was to entice him in to attempting an escape attempt, thinking that he could get away, and then it would create the excuse to kill George Jackson by a preemptive first strike. And if you read or get access to the bullet direction and the inconsistencies of the explanation of how George Jackson was murdered, and also you realize that he was supposed to scale something like a 20-foot wall, then you realize, and you put the evidence together of the ballistics, the direction of the guns, and you can see how this escape attempt took place. But he was to be enticed to be holding an inoperable automatic gun that would be the purpose of an excuse to murder him, and it worked. And this information wasn't provided by the prosecutor during the discovery process of the trial. The prosecution kept all this silent, even though it was available, and it was available in a published book, a lot of the material. It's been out for a year and a half. A criminologist by the name of Louis Mosseri, I can't pronounce it, Mosseri, official of CII, corroborates this information that the criminal conspiracy section agents and others knew that a gun was to be smuggled to George Jackson. And a small group of correctional or law enforcement officers have suppressed the evidence that there was this phony gun. And as I say, Lewis Tackwood, formerly of criminal conspiracy section, who not only worked with Melvin Cotton Smith, one of the informers in this area, but worked with Donald DeFries in the Los Angeles Police Department, the Criminal Conspiracy Section, came forward and told about these things, exposed them in his book because of the murder of James Carr and George Jackson. But Tackwood confirmed that when he was at Criminal Conspiracy Section headquarters, August 22, 1971, one day after the shootout, he was told by Mr. Sherritt that the police had known of the breakup plan for months, and they even knew the date of the breakup try. And this comes out in the breakout try. They knew that Bingham would be tricked and that he would be made available to give a dummy weapon to George Jackson. Now, a lot of the radicals in the Bay Area and members of the San Quentin Six, such as Hugo Pinnell, have been displeased with my allegation that Stephen Bingham will turn out to be an agent provocateur like the others. The affidavit claims that Bingham didn't understand what he was doing, that he was ignorant to it, but Stephen Bingham brings a tape recorder, and the tape recorder allegedly holds a gun which doesn't fit in George Jackson's wig, and then Stephen Bingham splits. And if the date was known ahead of time, the date of the breakout try, if they knew about it for months, then it's almost pretty clear that they had to have some way to have Stephen Bingham visiting that exact day. I feel that he had to be some part of this conspiracy, just like Lee Harvey Oswald is not completely clear in the John Kennedy assassination. If Oswald was placed in the book depository, and if a motorcade is to bring the car in front of the depository, you have to be pretty sure that Oswald is at a place and not home that day. He has to be agreeable to part of the plan, to be a fall guy or a patsy or have some part in the assassination conspiracy. Otherwise, he may just stay home with a cold that day, and then they wouldn't have their patsy. Any plan that is this complicated for months in advance, where they know of a trial, where the members of the Los Angeles police are in front of the court shootout or could have stopped the George Jackson killing, I still believe in time you'll find that Stephen Bingham was an agent provocateur in this operation. Tackwood told me he was, and everything else that Tackwood said is being confirmed by people in the CII who are talking now and is now being presented into the courts. James Carr was then murdered after his role in framing George Jackson. Lamar Mims and Richard Rodriguez are the convicted killers. Many believed right from the beginning they were hired killers, and many believe the Los Angeles Police Department did it, and even Lewis Tackwood wrote and said that the Los Angeles Police Department was out to murder his sister's brother, James Carr. And Mr. Cox has this affidavit which mentions, as I say, the Department of Corrections. It names a correctional officer, a specific correctional officer, with the smuggling of a gun into the Adjustment Center. Now, that is new information to me and to listeners of KLRB. I didn't have the name of a specific correctional officer who did take the gun into the Adjustment Center. But in lieu of the allegations I made a year and a half ago on this particular case of what I call the opening of Watergate West, you can see how important this is that a named correctional officer is now available with having smuggled a gun into the Adjustment Center for a shootout. Now, this is pretty shocking, what I'm saying to you. I think it's as shocking in its own way, not to men who are inside prison, because they know these things happen, but it's pretty shocking to America, who believes in J. Edgar Hoover or their Central Intelligence Agency or Richard Nixon or Mr. Haldeman or Ehrlichman or their public officials, to find out just how far the former Attorney General will go, John Mitchell or Patrick Gray, burning and destroying evidence, or the Vice President is removed from office because of his wheeling and dealing and making a fast buck. And now we move to the law enforcement, the Attorney General of California, the police department, the creation of riots to murder black leaders, to murder prisoners, to set up even murder judge. I know of other people that have been murdered by these same teams, the U.S. Attorney Robert Meyer in Los Angeles, who was bucking the system to open up some of those things I talked about earlier, Watergate West. But there's the name of a correctional officer evidently now available on the smuggling of a gun into the Adjustment Center. And the evidence of this gun and similar materials has been suppressed by a small group of correctional officers and law officers responsible for investigating this. Now, there is a third, very specific and heretofore unreported weapon, And this information has come from operatives in the criminal conspiracy section of the Los Angeles Police Department, and it suggests that the operatives from Los Angeles Police Department and others cooperating with covert agencies include the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI. Now, this came out this week in the San Francisco Examiner and the San Francisco Chronicle, and this is exactly what I had in Watergate West in The Realist just 2 years ago. As a matter of fact, Jim Easton on KGO was talking about the new allegations of the shootout and the bloodbath in the Bay Area this last Friday, and people were calling in, and he was saying again to effect, I understand, here's Paul Krasner of The Realist and Mae Brussel, and they've done it again. Here they argue. They didn't want to believe this stuff in the Bay Area. They didn't want to believe the Watergate and the charges I was making then, and they were giving us credit and saying, by God, they did it again. They told us this a year and a half, 2 years ago. They talk about it, and now the links of the CIA and the FBI with the Department of Corrections and the Los Angeles Police Department may just be exposed in regards to the agency and the gun and the Houston links to Houston, Texas. Now, this affidavit that was filed by Mr. Frank Cox contends that he has information from reliable sources that directly supports the conclusion that the law enforcement and correctional personnel engage in undercover and illegal acts that have direct bearing on the escape attempt of George Jackson and the subsequent murder. I've gone at length on this today because it's terribly important. You'll be hearing a lot about it in regards to the outcome of the well-being of Robert Hyde. You'll hear about it when I talk the week after next. I'll give some more resume of the links of the Central Intelligence Agency in the police departments, Department of Corrections. And next week I'm going to have Bob Cutler here talking about his new book and his book on Chappaquiddick. And then next week, the week after, hopefully we'll get back to that. I do want to spend the last 3 minutes talking about a New York Times article. I can barely give a resume, but it's important in regards to the Patty Hearst case because the things that I am writing will come out in time. It takes a while for these things to actually become investigated. And the Patty Hearst kidnapping, again, I say is a CIA, FBI operation, like I said, the prison shootouts. The New York Times, Thursday, March 20th, 1975, has a long article, a whole half a page, on two former agents say the FBI has kidnapped suspected foreign spies in the U.S. I bring that up because Peter Lorenz in Germany was abducted. It was Germany's first political kidnapping, like the Patty Hearst. And he tells how he got in a car and got injections in his legs and arms, which dazed him. And like Bob Cutler sent me a note last week, he said, this is perfectly acceptable in a foreign city like Berlin, but not in the USA, such as Chappaquiddick, or I say with the SLA with Patty Hearst. But this article goes on to admit that the FBI does kidnappings, that they take certain persons over and work them over. Two agents of the FBI have talked about this. They talk about mental duress as an important part of the interrogations and putting them, these people that they've kidnapped in safe houses for several weeks. They sleep with these people and went to the bathroom with them. And after weeks of intense interrogations, the particular people break down and agree to become a double agent and work for the agency. And this article is about kidnapping in the United States by the Federal Bureau of Investigations. If you haven't heard anything yet, there's more to come. I guess anything is possible until we admit that the FBI and CIA are behind the actual political kidnappings. Allegedly, the people that are kidnapped are suspected intelligence operatives. But it goes on to say that it's a rough business, that none of them ever died as a direct result of the kidnapping, but he doesn't say if they died as an indirect result of the kidnapping escape, such as the six SLA that were burned down in Los Angeles. And there is a coterie that carries out illegal high-risk operations such as burglaries or kidnappings. This is from the New York Times, that no orders are ever given in writing. There's no record that exists. It's very, very closely held. Mr. Hoover gave the orders when he was living, and that nothing is put down in writing. It's oral. So hopefully in the next week or two, besides the prison conspiracies, we'll get into and back to the SLA and the FBI kidnappings. My time is up this week, and I hope we get some better news and more exposures and get closer to the truth as the weeks move on. Take care of yourselves, and this is Dialogue Conspiracy, and I'll be with you next week.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist May Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.